Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. Buckle up your seatbelts. It's going to be an exciting hour. It's the Copyright Forum. And joining us today, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, your music, your art. If you have a question about copyright law or maybe what's in the public domain, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Most of our guests are in the public domain, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but that number is 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, your copyright calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show is the Copyright Forum, and to answer your questions, we have our great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. If you have a copyright question today, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Paul, Bill, Polly, welcome back.
Thanks.
Hello, Ray.
Well, we discussed, you were discussing, and I was trying to figure it all out before the show started. Sovereign immunity. It's going before the Supreme Court. What is sovereign immunity?
Sovereign immunity is essentially means you can't sue a state governmental organization for copyright infringement.
You can't sue a state unless the state says it's okay to sue, because it's broader. It's than just copyright.
Yeah, and that's... enshrined in the 11th Amendment.
That's good.
So, of the copyright law.
And that's why it's before the Supreme Court.
And, yes. Well, because this parrot ship photographer, Frederick Allen, had some of the these photographs he took of Blackbeard's ship, Queen Anne's Revenge, taken and used by the state of North Carolina. And he sued for infringement, and it's been through the various courts. And now, because the courts supported him, the state of North Carolina has now moved to dismiss the claim on the grounds of sovereign immunity. So it's going to go before the Supreme Court. And hopefully sovereign immunity can be stricken down.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that the states can just go infringe without
anything it wants to.
You know, and a lot of states are allowed, you know, allow lawsuits. And I think the federal circuit courts, the courts of appeals, have disagreed on whether or not states should be, be able to avail themselves of sovereign immunity. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I've had two really blatant infringement cases that basically we couldn't pursue because of the attorneys on the other side claim sovereign immunity.
Well, let's see. Polly Law, do you think the plaintiff will win, the state, or do you think that the artist will win?
Well, I always hope the artist wins.
I didn't say hope.
I have no idea because, you know, with the Supreme Court configured as it is now.
Who knows?
Who knows? You know, they could go all states' rights or they, you know, artists don't have a whole lot of friends up on the Hill right now.
And intellectual property issues never go by party line. It's not like a liberal versus a conservative. Yeah. Some of the most liberal people in Congress are absolute monsters in terms of maximum intellectual property protection because they represent places like Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, more conservative people understand it and are much more liberal. Orrin Hatch is like a great rational friend of reasonable intellectual property attorney because he does stupid gospel music.
Yeah, he writes music.
Nice. Stupid gospel music. But how can it make sense that I take a picture of Blackbeard's boat or whatever, and an estate can then use that without compensating me in some way? I'm not understanding how a government entity is different than a corporation.
Sovereign immunity doesn't make sense, at least not to me.
To quote Mel Brooks, it's good to be king.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is enshrined in the Constitution. And back when the Constitution was formulated, when that amendment was formulated, there was no such thing really as copyrights. You know, the Statute of Anne was still fairly new. And I'm sure they never expected it to be extended to kind of a situation.
Yeah, I also don't think that they
underwater photography. They weren't thinking about that in 1776.
They anticipated this kind of blatant infringements that states have undertaken in numerous situations.
Yeah.
Well, the number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Paul, Bill, or Polly, or all three at once, the number is 800-348-2551 on the Copyright Forum. We'll start out with Clark in Albany. Clark.
Hello. I just have a question. You know, I'm like an amateur photographer, and like if I wanted to post things, I've been reluctant to post stuff because, you know, I kind of want to protect it and get my ducks in a row before I do it. Or like just what's an easy way to, how would I find out about copywriting photographs, or what do I got to do that?
All right. Before the answer, is your turn signal on by any chance?
Yep, it is. Sorry.
Turn that one off. Unless you're signaling, then in which case, go ahead.
I thought it was a metronome.
Yeah.
But it's important to understand that you own the copyrights as soon as you create the photographs. And registering your copyrights is the best way to protect them because you get greater rights than you would normally otherwise. You know, I wouldn't be, everybody posts their photographs online unless you think the photograph has some commercial possibilities. I wouldn't hesitate to put stuff up there. And I wouldn't worry, you know, and I've said this a million times, I wouldn't worry that other people are going to share your photograph. I'd be more worried that other people won't, you know. But if someone starts using your work commercially, then you can go after them. And if you really want to protect them to the maximum amount that you can register them with the Copyright Office. You can go to copyright.gov and sign up for their electronic filing system, and then deal with their ridiculously it's just not functional registration system. But
don't put him off. Don't put him off. It's not
just
that bad.
Just
it's
do it. I suggest having a drink before you try to tackle it, or tea if you're so inclined.
Well, I found actually their demo, if you go through the demo, it makes it relatively easy. But I would remind you that as a photographer, you can register up to 750 images under one $55 fee.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And also, if you're going to be posting things on like Facebook or something, you can always add a watermark to the piece, greatly grayed out, so it's just barely visible. But it does. I always do it for work I post online.
All things can, in Photoshop, all things can be added and all things can be removed.
That's right.
Absolutely. I was just curious. So if I have a bunch of photos and you just do it in one shot, right? Yep. Unless you had 750 photos at once, but as many as you got, you could register under that $55 fee. Then you got to go back and do it all over again, or whatever you have there, if there's ones that you like.
Yeah, right. I mean, just do it every 3 or 4 months or even once a year.
Wait, back up a bit. You just need to register them once. You don't have to register individual, if, say...
Yeah, I understand that. But I'm just saying, like, you could register up, you said up to 750 photos.
Yeah,
right.
Is it
under
still
one
that?
Fee, but...
Sorry.
Yeah. If if I only had 50 to register, I mean, it doesn't keep it open for those other 700. No. I got to go file.
Yeah,
right.
But it's only a $55 filing fee each time. So
now, does he have to put a description for each photo?
You have to upload the actual photo.
It's better. Right. It's better if you do that.
And especially if you keep that copy, a copy for yourself.
Yes, because
so you can find the registration.
Because if somebody registers, if somebody infringes it, and you need to pursue it, your attorney is going to want to know what the name of the image was. You're going to need to be able to identify it easily. So I would strongly recommend that you take the time to assign a name or at least a number to each of the photos that you are registering.
And the copyright website has a mechanism for you to put a title and description and such?
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp here to answer your questions. Got a question about intellectual property? Now's the time. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp are here to help you. John and Troy. John, you're on.
Hi. What can you tell me about renewal of trademark registration?
When you get your registration on the federal level, between the fifth and the sixth year, you have to show them that you're still using it and pay a filing fee for that, which is like $125 or something. But you know that's to weed out people who get trademarks, use them for 3 months, and then go bust. And it clears that up. And then
that's a one-time thing.
And then between the ninth and the tenth year, you have to renew it. And that renewal is then good for another 10 years. So hypothetically, you can keep your trademark, infinity.
But you have to keep using it.
You have to keep using it. And you have to show them every time you file that you are continuing to use it in commerce.
I did a small graphic design job recently for someone who had a trademark on a book that she had done a number of years ago. But in order to keep her trademark on the title, I did a series of bookmarks for her that she could give out at bookshops that had the book name on it.
So it's a rather loose definition of commerce if you're giving something away, but it still counts.
Yes.
What would be the implications of letting one lapse? So then is it up for grabs for somebody, or is it just challengeable? Or
yeah, it's up for grabs. I mean, I've registered plenty of trademarks that were trademarks for similar items, in the not so recent past. The original holder can pop back up and say, "Look, I've been I think after 3 years, it's presumed of non-use. You're presumed to have abandoned it, but that can be rebuttable if you show that you're continuing to." Make plans to start using the trademark again.
Or if you still have a website with the trademark, even if it hasn't been updated.
Say it again, John.
If you're still using it and can prove you're still using it but haven't paid the fees for the registration renewal,
Well, I mean, at that point, you're going to have some pretty strong common law rights, whether or not you're registered or not. And so nobody's going to be able to use your mark at least in the geographical area you're using it, and if you're using it on the internet, they can't use it anywhere. But and I've told clients that after 10 years, I said, look, nobody has ripped you off yet. It's a really unique trademark. We can continue with the registration, or we can just let it lapse and save yourself some money, and then you can rely on your common law rights.
Yeah. Okay. Which obviously could cost some money of to defend or whatever.
Yeah, that's a billable hour for Paul right there. All right, John. Thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. This is interesting to me because if I have a genius idea, trademark, whatever, but I'm a lousy businessman and nothing happens for 3 years, then somebody else can swoop in.
Mm-hmm.
But if, as Polly said, if I put a website up, never update it, it's doing business?
I think you have to show that you're – it's a little more, I think, than just having a website up. You know, you have to – the website has to sell something or advertise something, and you have to
show that – You have to sell one of them to consider – to be considered
There's a lot of court cases with that, with whether or not it was a fraudulent – You know, a fraudulent transaction only.
Your aunt bought the one copy.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't take much. It doesn't take a whole lot.
The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question about copyrights or intellectual property, Bill Westwood is here, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. I think, is Zeppelin back in the courts again for Stairway to Heaven?
Yes.
What's up with that? When will that end?
I don't know, but I think it's. I think there's a retrial taking place.
I thought so.
You know, and since the first trial, copyright law, you know, because of a couple of other jury things, has gotten even more screwed up than it was before.
Where do you stand on that, Paul? I mean, if you listen to the original song, there's some similarities.
Yeah,
there.
Well, you're talking about basically a chord structure and a sound of a guitar, and those things aren't copyrightable. There's no taking of the melody, no taking of the words. It's just a riff, and those aren't protectable, and it's ridiculous. And
riffs are. I mean, da 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 da. I mean, obviously he's
that's
long
classical.
Dead. But what I'm saying is that's a riff, and that's just a couple of notes and a string.
In classical,
section.
That would be the melody, you know, but. You know, hopefully they get out from under it. The attorney for the plaintiffs is like this super. He's an interesting guy, but he's a super aggressive young attorney. So we'll see what happens.
You said that with some disdain. The young attorney thing.
No, I didn't.
No. Okay. Good. All right. Good. Live and let live. Right, Paul. Jason in North Adams. Jason, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Good. So my question is kind of a tricky one here. So, I mean, we all remember back in the day where websites first started coming around and, you know, people were building kind of haphazardly and they were registering domain names on behalf of other companies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I do a lot of this in my day to day. It's what I do for a living is, you know, take care of websites and stuff. But we have an interesting situation where the domain name was registered by another party for us or for the company I represent in this case. And they used contact information that was no good. They used a bunch of nines for the fax number, phone numbers that are no good. And we can't reach the person who's considered the registrant of that domain.
Yikes.
Now, we've gone through and tried to recover it through different means, through the domain registrar. They've told us that we have to go to ICANN, the organization that's mm-hmm. supposed to govern these things. And they basically, nobody knows what to do with us because we can't reach the person in order to get them to release the domain. And we can't, you know, so we can't even press charges or anything.
Is there such a thing as an orphan domain?
No. I mean, a lot of domain registrants remain anonymous for, you know, all kinds of reasons. But if you go to ICANN and it's, you know, you fill out their form. It's this international governance body of the internet, and I've done it a bunch of times. And you fill out the form and tell them why you think, you know, you have a greater right to the domain than the person holding it, and you may have to like explain that you can't find the owner of the domain and tell them what all the efforts that you've undertaken to find them.
Point out all the errors in the registration material.
And if there's no answer, you know, ICANN will tell the registrar to give you the domain, and it'll be that simple. And it's not cheap. It's I think the filing fee is like $1,200 or $1,300, but it's a lot cheaper than your alternative, which is to go to federal court.
Mm. Yeah, the funny part about it is they allow you to continue to pay the bill as a lesser than registrant contact on the domain. So you know we can keep the domain going forever, just not under our direct quote unquote ownership. I know it's all kind of fuzzy around that, but
and the company that registered it on your behalf isn't responding.
No, it's some older gentleman who was doing business a long time ago, and as far as I know, he's no longer available.
Might not even be
around. I mean, I've left messages on. Yeah, I mean, I've left messages for on the last known contact and whatever, but. Yeah, it's a shame that some people do business that way. It really is.
Yeah, well, I think ICANN is your answer.
All right, Jason, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Copyright Forum today, Polly Law, Paul Rapp, and Bill Westwood here, and Sid in Weston, Vermont. Sid, you're on.
You are so very gracious to accept my call. I am...
Yes.
Well, it's true. No, of course. You didn't even make me wait that long.
No.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
I'm in my kitchen in Weston, and I have two quick approaches. One is that I formed a band 2 years ago. I cast the band. I put it together. I am the leader of the band. Oh, it's so interesting. On good old Facebook, I saw about a week ago that they got together and played without me.
Ouch.
Which is, it's funny and sad, but I would like to know if I feel quietly outraged and horrified and just sad.
Yeah.
And but I don't know if I have any right to anything except moral indignation.
Oh, that's
but
terrible.
That's not even what I really wanted to ask you about. What would it cost for me to trademark my band name? I'm already selling t-shirts, and I'm selling literally as many as I can print up, which is great, but I don't want to get in any trouble, and I want to own this thing that I came up with. It's more than a band, it's kind of a lifestyle, and it's called Bitch Face.
Okay, well, let's not repeat that, but that's
wait
fine.
A minute, you called before. And then we talked out.
That's all right. All right. Go ahead. Continue. Don't say it again.
What? If you guys can say Trump 20,000.
All right. Enough. What?
Well, you know, we could get a state trademark, which is fast and cheap. A federal trademark, you know, will cost you anywhere from $600 to $900. Or if you use LegalZoom, $2,000.
Yeah.
They're underwriters here, aren't they?
I have no idea. I have no idea. Frankly, I'm just hoping the delay worked. That's all. And thank you, Sid. And good luck. And
call me, Sid.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Oh, Lordy.
That's acceptable.
I think the delay worked, Zach. I think everything's fine. It's acceptable, but not what we
not
aspire
palatable.
To here on public radio. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800, it's getting warm in here, isn't it, Polly? 800-348-2551, it's the Copyright Forum. Well, what do you guys want to talk about?
Well, we can talk about the CASE Act.
Oh,
yes,
yeah, what's the CASE
please.
Act?
The CASE Act is the Copyright Alternative and Small Claims Enforcement Act.
Ah.
Which they're trying to pass in Congress. And
it's past judiciary.
Right. It has laudable goal, reducing barriers to copyright enforcement for those with limited financial resources by providing a faster and cheaper avenue for remedies. However, people on both sides are objecting to it, saying that it doesn't give adequate potential protection.
Well, you know, I get calls at least once a week from people that get nasty grams from this fake law firm in California that represents the Getty Archive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this shakedown thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one this morning, and I just said, you know, these clowns don't sue, you know. They're in California.
Are they a real law firm?
I think one of the guys is, and he sends out these form letters, and he just goes for low-hanging fruit. He's got an agreement with Getty that... You know, whatever he recovers, he keeps a third
gets
or something.
A bounty.
You know, and so if somebody pays up, fine. If somebody pushes back,
right.
You know, and so I've been telling people just to ignore it. And my problem with the specialized copyright court, low cost copyright court, is this is who it will benefit. But then I've also heard that both sides have to agree to be in this.
And that's one of the problems from the standpoint of the person accused or the company accused of infringement, apparently,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they're saying that if they fail to agree, then they're automatically put in, is the way I understand it.
Mm.
So,
well, then they don't. Then why do they even? You have to agree, but if you don't agree, you go in anyways.
Yeah, I know. I'm not an expert on this. I've only glossed over the reading of
yeah.
it. But you know, illustrators object to it because they're afraid that they won't be able to get adequate recompense.
Yeah, because there's limitations on damages, right?
Right.
But now, you know.
Well, I agree with you.
You're stuck in a regular small claims court
right.
most of the time with
right.
with a judge who doesn't know his aunt from his elbow.
Well, that's
about
the
copyright.
Case even with federal judges, in my
yeah.
experience, with a lot of them.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say all of them, but
yeah.
some certainly do. But I think more often than not, the ones that I've dealt with, I knew more about copyright than they did.
Yeah,
and that's,
yeah.
You
the
know,
farther you
scary.
Get from New York or L.A.,
scary,
the less they're gonna,
you know.
The less they're gonna know.
Yeah, but I think from my perspective personally, given the infringements that I've had, as long as I had the opportunity to opt out of the small claims action
right.
issue and go ahead and sue, then I would be okay. But
which highlights the importance of registering your
right,
copyrights.
Right.
So you can avoid small claims or the special small claims.
Now, I'm not sure I understand this fully, but isn't it to the larger corporation's advantage to not opt into this because most people who sue can't afford to sue?
Yeah.
That's one of the theories, yeah, that one of the advantages is that a lot of illustrators and photographers, simply don't have the financial means to pursue this. Although from my experience, if you've got a good case and you find somebody that'll take the case on contingency, it really isn't terribly expensive. But it could get expensive if a company like Disney decided to take you to the mat,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
in the federal small claims court. Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at the details either enough to, but you know, if both sides get to opt out, if either side gets to opt out,
what's
I want to be
point?
A judge there because you won't have anything to do all day. You know?
Well, apparently the potential defendants feel that that they only have a one-shot opportunity to opt out, and they're afraid the way that the information would come, somebody would miss it, and then they would...
Right, because it would all be like first-class mail and
right.
stuff like that.
Right.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question about intellectual property, Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp are here to answer your questions. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Copyright Forum today. Paul Rapp is here, Bill Westwood on Poly Law. This email came in, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one is from Frank in Rhinebeck. I painted a large mural in New Jersey in 1997. In 2002, a big-budget Hollywood movie came out with major movie stars, and my mural was in the movie several times. I moved away and was not aware that the movie was being made until a friend told me he saw my mural in the film. The mural was not just a one-time background shot. It was actually an integral part of the movie storyline. Every time the director wanted the audience to know where they were in the story, the mural would pop up and identify where the action was, in this case in Jersey City, New Jersey. I saw the film, checked the credits, did not see my name. Do I have recourse for compensation at this late date? And that's from Frank in Rhinebeck.
When did that occur?
Painted the mural in 1997. In 2002, a big budget movie was made in Hollywood.
But you didn't see it
until years later.
You should get to an attorney. You've got 3 years from the date of discovery,
right?
And you know the date you knew or, you know, I love the legal term knew or should have known that, that you know, that you'd been infringed on.
But is it not the incumbent upon the producer of the film to let the artist know?
I mean, there's a lot of cases out there, and a lot of times they, like, break down how many seconds, you know, the work is in the, you know, and with outdoor art, sometimes the considerations are different because it's part of the landscape.
Right, if it's a de minimis use.
But this sounds like, I mean,
this sounds like more than a de minimis use.
Okay, going back to sovereign immunity, if he was commissioned by the city to do the mural, wouldn't they own the rights to the mural?
Not if he didn't sign over the copyright.
Yeah. So this goes back to, did he transfer the copyright at the time of the sale?
Yeah.
Hmm. An interesting case.
But you really need to talk to an attorney about this and see what the state of the art of the law is.
And answer these questions about the contract and things like that.
Because I know someone who did a poster, and it appeared it was a copy of it was in the Xerox room on the set of L.A. Law. Mm. So every time they did a scene, it was in the background. She almost bought a house with what she got that.
Absolutely.
I had a client who had three works in the apartment in the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And so, you know, all of these paintings would show up like 12 times during each episode. And, you know, I mean, that's a payday right there. I mean, when it's recurring like that.
Yeah. And especially if it's used to establish location.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's crucial.
I think that'd be worth pursuing.
All right. Now back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Jeff in Pine Bush. Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
So I created a card game a while back. I'm a roller derby fan, and I've helped out some teams. And the card game is a simple, clever game that can be used to resolve bar bets or just have a quick game. And it uses pictures of the players that they would offer along with statistics made up or otherwise about that. It's their card. It's like a superhero card or a baseball card for them. But the game has a format. It has rules to it. How might I go about getting a patent or otherwise protecting that intellectual property?
These are real people?
The concept of the game can be applied to any roller derby team, but the idea would be that the individual skaters and refs and even the crowd can put their own pictures into the game.
I see.
Oh, that's cool. You can register... I mean, this is a great question because it hits all of the main prongs of intellectual property law. We just talked about privacy law. You can copyright the cards themselves as works of, you know, original expression, as works of art. You can register the trademark for the name of the game. And then I would talk to a patent lawyer, which I am not, but there's a lot of great patent lawyers around, about whether you can patent the functionality of the game, because you might be able to.
I had heard once that I had read that card games cannot be patented, but if you have a simple board that the cards are put on, even a piece of paper, that now that can be patented.
I don't think that's the case.
You could probably copyright the design on the board.
Yeah, I would do what Paul said. I would talk to a patent attorney. It's always important, from my perspective, that you get really sound legal advice as opposed to you heard somewhere somebody said blah blah blah.
We get that a lot on this show.
Somebody said I can protect my copyrights by mailing a copy in to myself.
All right, Jeff, thanks.
Go with a pro.
Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, the copyright forum. Andrea in Lenox, you're on.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I am showing the silent film, The Passion of Joan of Arc, coming up soon at SPAC at the Spa Little Theater. And I'm using the original music from 1928. And I've made a new edition of the score in parts. And I'd like to be able to sell it at some point or rent it to people. I'm not renting the film, just the score and the parts. So since this is out of copyright, would that be legal to do so, or can I copyright it?
What's your comment on that?
I think you, if it was in 1928, the original score, it's still potentially in copyright. Right now, anything that was originally published before 1924 is in the public domain, and everything afterwards is potentially still covered by copyright, and that depends on whether it was registered correctly in the first place and then whether it was renewed. In 1928, you would, if you got your copyright, you would have to renew it after 28 years, and, you know, most people didn't. So you'd have to have someone investigate whether there's still a live copyright. And who did the original score? Was it someone prominent?
Well, the original scores composed were Puget in 1928, and Sam Fox was the distributor, but it hasn't been renewed. And it was sitting in the Library of Congress all these years.
Ah.
And I don't even think it's there anymore.
Well, I think then you're probably good to go. And it's so close to the public domain. It's funny, I just had a question this morning about a 1928 work that somebody wanted to incorporate in a movie. I just seem, you know, it's close enough to going into the public domain, and the likelihood of someone, you know, finding out about this and caring enough to do anything about it is pretty remote. So, you know, I would go ahead.
Me.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, well, thank you very much, because it's really fabulous music. So.
Great.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number on the Copyright Forum. John in Hyde Park. John.
Hey, Ray, it's John Fisher. How are you?
Hello.
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 Yes.
Hi.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, John Fisher here.
Hi, John. Oh, hey, how you doing, man?
Good. A couple of days before we get the students back at CNU. So. But I have a question about a book that I wrote with CIA was co-author, and I came up with a concept in there that I use on lectures all the time, and I'm wondering if and when I do leave the culinary, do I have rights to that one section in the book that I created, and is it mine, or do I share it with the culinary?
How's the copyright registered?
I haven't looked at it. I know that I'm the only named author.
Well, but are you sharing it with the Culinary Institute?
I have to look at the copyright inside the book and see if the name culinary is in there as co.
Okay. And is it something you wrote on your own time, or was it something you did when you were on the clock for CIA?
Well, I mean, I was writing at home, but technically I was working for the culinary when I was doing that.
The other thing you need to look at is what sort of contractual relationship do you have with CIA in terms of who owns copyright to whatever works might be produced. Universities will typically have a university policy as regards copyright and patents and inventions. I don't know. Paul's a lawyer here, but I would...
Without seeing your employment contract, and that's a good point, Bill. Without seeing your employment contract with the Culinary Institute, it's kind of hard to...
It could be that anything I created while under their employ belongs to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible, and you know, sometimes you can just talk to them, say, look, I want to use this, and they'll say, fine, you know, if you're...
Get it in writing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, great. Thank you very much.
Hey, John, thanks a lot for calling. Now, John is a great mixologist. If he came up with a cocktail recipe, could he patent that or trademark that or anything?
You can't copyright recipes.
It'd be fun trying.
Oh, he has a gift. Let me tell you.
You have to experiment a lot.
If you have him up on a...
You have to do a lot of taste testing.
He's been on. Yeah, you want to try it out? He knows what he's doing. Christopher in Albany. Christopher, you're on.
Hey, you guys. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good.
So here's, I've been listening, and the employment and employee contract sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started a fairly large, prominent production company in the Capital Region. Subsequently parted ways with them. Not on good terms back in March. And they took my cell phone number. They took all my media. Still have me on the website. Even now, I've asked them to take my stuff down and continue to use the media I created there. do I have any action, recourse, or ownership of any copyright? There was no employee contract or anything like that.
As with every question about copyright, the answer is it depends.
Yeah. Cha-ching
there are a lot of ifs here.
We have to know more about your dynamic between you and the production company. And
I helped start it and run it, and my original production company was the basis of equipment, cameras, to start the new company when I joined forces with another gentleman.
And so were you full-time with this production company?
Yes, for 6 years.
So you were an employee.
So you were essentially an employee or an officer. So it sounds like they probably own all of it.
But even if there wasn't a written agreement,
right?
Okay.
If he was an employee.
Well, but it sounds like he was a co-owner.
I should have been a co-owner, but the one owner went and behind my back went and did an LLC and put it under his sole proprietorship. And then when I questioned finances and money, then subsequently I was then let go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like a great bar exam question, you know.
I would strongly encourage you to go sit down with an attorney and try to
sort
all of this stuff out.
All right, Christopher, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551, the number on the Copyright Forum. At Walter in East Otis. Walter, you're on.
Thank you very much. The reason I'm calling is I'm 81 years old, and my father, when I was very young, for a number of years, was a New York Daily News photographer. One day said, I begged him to take me to work. He took me to work the day of the Coney Island fire in 1944. Mm-hmm. My picture appeared on the front page of the Daily News with the caption, "A boy's dream goes up in smoke."
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I have a copy of the newspaper, and strangely enough, my daughter was trying to do some genealogy stuff and found a number of my father's photographs on Getty Images selling for $500 each. I was wondering if I have any right to getting a copy of the picture of me, or did all of that, I assume the Daily News may have sold its library to Getty.
Yeah, or just have Getty administering the rental. But if your father was a full-time employee of the Daily News the time, they will own the copyrights to all of the photographs. You could call the Daily News and just say, look, that's my dad.
Yeah. That's me in the picture.
And that's me in the picture.
Yeah.
Can you get me a print?
Picture.
You know, and they could call Getty and say, give Walter a print. The Daily News seems pretty reasonable these days.
All right.
Sort of generally.
Walter, that's an interesting story. Thanks for calling. Now
that's
over
great.
To Robert in Great Barrington. Robert.
Yes, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I have a question. My grandmother wrote the idea of a screenplay for The Mummy. My question is, do copyrights go to basically down through generations? She wrote it in 1932, and my father was her only child, and I'm one of three siblings who are his only children.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just wondering, how do copyrights, do they go down through generations? Or how
does
that work?
Yes, they do. Copyrights now last for the life of the author plus 70 years. Back then... Well, I mean, I think the more fundamental question is your grandmother who wrote the script probably gave it to the production company, probably
as a work for hire.
Wrote it for Universal.
Except work for hire wasn't a concept.
She was an employee.
Right.
And back then it was reversed. If you got paid to create something,
so
the movie studio probably owns all the intellectual property on that. you know, you could call the studio and ask them, but I mean, that's kind of how movies work. Everybody that's associated with a movie signs over all of their rights to the production company. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the production company can't do anything with the movie.
Did your grandmother receive royalties for her work? Or that was it just...
I'm unaware. My grandmother died in 1962. Mm. And I really only met her a few times. Uh-huh. But she had been... It was just one of these... I'm going to be writing or planning on writing a biography of her. And I was looking at a number of her papers are kept in the Yale Library. Uh-huh. And I happened to notice that it said all these things are... somehow related, or basically somehow belong to the descendants or something. So I was wondering does belong to the family.
Yeah, and they do, and chances are you said they was originally published in 1931. There's probably a few more years of viability in the copyrights.
Interesting, though, huh? The Mummy.
The Mummy.
You figure cool. Universal, they put out those movies, probably owns everything.
Yeah, and I'm
sure...
You
couldn't even use the makeup from those movies without being sued.
Probably.
The Frankensteins and all that stuff.
Well, to the extent they weren't original, yeah, you can, you know, Frankenstein kind of looks the same.
No, that's what you think.
Paul. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, we'll have to take that
one
to court.
You can't use the bolts.
That's right. Bernie in Saratoga, you got about a minute here, Bernie, a little less.
Hi, I'll make it quick. Thank you. I teach genetics, and I took the Johnny Cash song Folsom Prison Blues, and I rewrote the lyrics as a parody, and I call it Folsom Prison Clone. Now, if I post that online or use it in a classroom, am I violating a copyright law doing that?
Yes and no.
Yeah. Yeah. In theory, if it's a true parody, then you get fair use on that.
Yeah, but it has to be, okay, at least at this point, a parody of the original. Some of the jokes have to point back at through wordplay
system
or anything at the lyrics of the original or the prison system or something.
Okay.
Something like that.
I cloned the man in. How about I cloned the man in Reno just to watch him grow?
I'm not sure. Pretty close to the edge there. And we're talking
original
about fair use, which is incredibly complex. But putting it on YouTube may not be okay. And even if it's a parody, they'll probably pull it because they have bots that pull down things automatically that don't know about fair use.
Well, we are
using it in the classroom would be fine, though.
Thank you all for being here. Support comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, announcing their 35th season with Mamma Mia. Weekends, October 12th through 27th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park. HomemadeTheater.org. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting portraits and landscapes, celebrating the people, places, and history of the Mohawk Valley, including works by Winslow Homer and Gilbert Stuart, arkellmuseum.org. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts, locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, cocktails, live music every Friday, chestercommontable.com. And C&H Architects, helping clients throughout New England and New York to create a legacy of sustainable architecture through design and collaboration, designed for the next 100 years, chandharchitects.com. Thanks again to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here today. Thank you for listening, for the terrific calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Chekai took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, meteorologist Jason Goff will join us once again to discuss Hurricane Dorian and answer all your weather questions. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.